The Reserve Pool, Episode 10, Avengers Assemble! Exclamation point. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters and, of course, all the people who love to play it. This is Dave here.
And Katie.
And Evan.
So, we have all assembled here today to talk about the Avengers. But before we get to that... but before we get to that, don't forget, find us on Twitter, at The Reserve Pool. Find us on our Board Game Geek Guild. You can link... We have a link to that on our website. And we don't want to forget about the contest that we're running right now. Evan, could you fill in the details of that here?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. We've got a small supply of the month one OP basic action and a couple of the rewards, the Thor the Mighty, and we're going to give them away. 10 people will get the basic action, and 2 of those people will also get the Thor the Mighty. All you need to do is send an email to contest@thereservepool.com talking about your greatest loss or your best win. Send us your stories. We'll post. We'll probably wind up reading the winners online, so, you know, if they involve swinging off of a boat, doing kung fu fighting or something, you might not want to talk on... Might not want to have announced on air. Maybe consider that. But really, if you did do that, we want to know, so...
Honestly, that's how all of my games of Dice Masters go. Are you guys doing it wrong?
You're always, like, hanging from the ceiling, playing Dice Masters. That could be some pretty dice rolling.
I can vouch for this.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually bitten by a spider when I was younger, so upside down, kind of my natural state.
Interesting. Evan, what's our due date for that?
The due date for that will be early next Thursday. Looking at the calendar, the 24th.
Perfect. All right, and of course, one last thing, we have to thank M. Sheezy for his 5-star, well, I guess it could be a her, for their 5-star review on iTunes. Thanks so much, guys. So, we haven't talked about this part for a little while. What do you guys play in these days, other than Dice Masters?
Well, I've been playing a bunch of stuff. I recently picked up Quantum and Eminent Domain, both excellent games that I have played before. And I've been playing a good bit of Cutthroat Caverns, which is a cooperative game.
a good term.
The idea is that you're adventurers in a dungeon, and you've just found a gigantic, incredible magical artifact. And whoever gets out of the dungeon with the most prestige gets the artifact, which is the only piece of loot anyone cares about. So the idea is you have a bunch of monsters and or whatever trials to go through on your way out. And whoever gets the last blow on them gets prestige. So the idea is you need to leave the dungeon and get the final blow on all the fights, or as many of them as you can. And maybe kill off a few of your competitors if you need to. But at the same time, you don't want to be too competitive about it, because the game doesn't scale down if people die. So if you are too vicious to begin with, no one gets out alive.
I like those games where it's cooperative, but people have their own hidden agenda. I think the new Dead of Winter is going to be like that, a deck-building game about sort of a zombie apocalypse, but not exactly the same as the trend of zombie games has been. But there's, I think, where you have your own secret condition, and everybody wins, everybody loses. But if everybody wins and you didn't satisfy your objective, you don't win, actually, which is pretty cool. I like those cooperative games, and I like that term.
I'm sure I've heard it somewhere, so I can't claim the credit.
Fair enough. Katie, I know you've been pretty busy. Have you had any time to play anything at all?
No, I just successfully got older last week, so, you know, I was busy with that last weekend.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Forgot about that. Yeah. It'll by the time the show goes on, it'll have been a little while, but yeah, cool. So successfully older.
Yes.
Were you worried about failing?
I mean, there's always a worry, you know, the night before, just in general, you know, you might wake up and just it's just not happening, and it can happen. On the other hand, I did totally get carded, and somebody said I looked a good decade younger than I am, so as long as that doesn't make me under 18, that's cool.
Very cool. I've been playing a couple of things, but recently we played Hanabi, which we were talking pre-show about the Spiel des Jahres Awards, because they were just recently announced. And Hanabi won that award. That's the Game of the Year by a German publication. Hanabi won that award last year, and we have it. It's a nifty little card game, but I hesitate to call it a game because it's more like a puzzle. So you have your cards in your hand, and they're facing outward, actually. You can't see what's in your hand, but other players can. So you can give other players clues, and you're trying to like either trash cards or play them down because you're trying to put together a fireworks display. So you have to play all these cards in sequence from 1 to 5. But there are a couple of cards where there's only like one of them. So if you trash the wrong one, then you're not going to finish that one. And it's cooperative. You're just supposed to play for your best score. There's not a lot of an actual game in there. It's definitely a really cool puzzle. But I don't know if it was Game of the Year. I think it was more Puzzle of the Year last year. But I know a lot of people really love it. It's cool. I enjoy it most of the time. I don't like the way it makes me feel when I'm putting something down that I don't know what it is. But it is what it is. I don't know. This year, of course, the Spiel des Jahres was some game called Camel Up. And another one, the Kenner Spiel, the Connoisseur's game, was Istanbul. But we're actually here to talk about Dice Masters, aren't we?
Yes, we are. So.
Yes, we are. All right, so then let's move on and see what people have been saying to us these days.
Our first mailbag of the day comes from Joe. He says, "I'd love a quick discussion of villain rerolls if possible. One thing he's been thinking of is making sure your villains are of a particular energy type, so if rerolls do happen, you can take advantage of some additional energy in your reserve pool. It's not the optimal situation, but it'd be cool to exact some revenge for reroll with those, hopefully, two energies."
Yeah, I mean, I think that works. One thing that I personally noted is currently, with the current basic action meta, it seems like shields don't get a lot of love in the global arena. There's a couple, but I think that's probably the weakest energy. Well, fist too. So I think your bolt and your mask villains are kind of the ones that you might have the best opportunity to use on that. The one thing to remember about this is it won't necessarily be your turn when your villains get rerolled, because your opponent can force that. So you should really focus on the global actions that you might use with the failed energy. I think Norman Osborn Green Goblin is pretty decent for this one, because you can maybe quick sacrifice a sidekick or something with the bolt energy you get out of him. But that's just a thought.
Yeah, and bolt and mask villains actually make up a good chunk of the villains that there are. We have the Green Goblin, Loki, Magneto, Mystique. So that's not so bad. You're going to have 12 cards out of, I think, 21 or so villains. I could be wrong on that. regardless of that, yeah, if you're set up to be able to use some globals, of course, Green Goblin could fill himself if you have Nog, you know, that you're using in reserve there. And of course, the global on invulnerability, I believe, uses a bolt. So, yeah, there's some possibilities there. And I think it's a good strategic thought to have. Like, if the worst case happens and this gets rerolled to something I don't want it to be, can I still use it? And I think you would want the answer to be yes, if possible.
Yeah, so I think shield and fist are kind of the losers on that one. There's bolt and mask are probably some of the best globals in the game right now, I think.
Well, I will note that though I will note with shields, many of the shield globals do involve taking less damage. So if you're going to, I do think, I will admit, the shield villains, Doc Ock and Doc Doom, are
not good. Not,
I wouldn't necessarily, well, Doom has his uses, but I think the problem with Doom is that he does not play well with others. It's sort of hard to fit him into a deck unless you're really going for a very villain-heavy deck. So you may want to wind up using the shield villains, but if you're going to use your shield villains, they do have global options that will help you compensate for the fact that, oh, one of your big beefy guys is no longer there.
Yeah, and of course the only fist villain right now is Venom, so there's that. He can feed himself there too with his own globals, but I don't know. Rare has the situation been that I've said, oh man, I wish I could use Venom's global. I don't know about you guys. I haven't found it yet. I'm sure it's out there.
Oh, I mean, I use it against Venom more than I use it as a Venom player.
Yeah. Because half the time, who are you fighting when it's fist energy? Oh, it's Sarita. Do you really want to help her get killed?
Yeah. Yeah, very true.
Well, as long as she gets to attack.
Yep.
Our next mail comes from Sean, and he says, great podcast. I'm with you every week. Looking forward to it. So really, thanks for listening in there, Sean.
Yeah, thanks, Sean.
We appreciate your appreciation.
Sean has a question concerning Storm Wind Rider and also Magneto, along with Storm Wind Rider's ability and Magneto's global, about how both of them take a character who is on your opponent's field and eventually moves that character to the used pile rather than to the KO to prep. And so he's just sort of asking if there was a name for that, kind of talking about the difference between the churn, where you get to churn your own characters when they're KO'd, versus you sending them straight to used. So let's talk about that a little bit.
It's true, because a lot of people play with like the assassins, and we've talked a lot about that. But these guys, guy and gal here, what they do is they just kind of blow you away. It's not like you're knocked out. You're just kind of really, really, really far away from where you were, I suppose. And you have a long journey to get back. I don't know if I could come up with a name for that ability off the cuff. Maybe you guys can. But yeah, it's a really good call, because as I think he points out here somewhere, it denies your opponent some resources for the future. And that's always nice.
Yeah, I mean, both of those characters are fantastic. Their ability to send to used is so useful, because your opponent, probably by the time you have those characters out, is going to have at least 20 dice, running through their bag. And if you can deny them their ability to either get those energy back or get those characters back, it's definitely super helpful.
And before you guys send an email or put a message or put a comment on, yes, we know, Katie knows, Magneto's not sending them directly to use, but it's energy in your reserve pool. It's going to go to used eventually, okay? So don't worry, we know.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get to re-roll him and get a face, and he never goes to prep. So he will end up in used whether you get to spend energy or not.
Exactly. So do we have a name for that? I don't know. I know we've sort of been coining terms left and right here and there. Some of them have stuck, some of them haven't.
Dump but, truck.
No,
garbage collector.
Banish is what comes to mind, but that really seems like it belongs in Magic or perhaps Dungeons and Dragons Dice Masters and not Marvel Dice Master. Negative zone.
When I think of banishing, though, a lot of people will associate that with a somewhat popular deck builder, Ascension, because when you're actually removing a card from the game entirely, that's banishing in that one. And I can't remember what's the term for that in Dominion. I think they just go with trash. In that game. But so there are other games that use that to mean a different thing. It's kind of like the issue we got into not that long ago with side deck.
Yep. Sideboard. I think it was.
Yeah, or sideboard, right.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a snappy name. At the end of the day, they're still assassin characters. They're just, it's super effective.
Yeah, that's true, because they're still targeted abilities and they're still getting rid of you.
They're assassins that bury you. I guess that's kind of closer to, like, I guess the magic term buried, which no one actually uses anymore, because I don't think they call it that. But way, way back in the day.
I remember buried.
Yeah,
I
do too. Buried meant it dies and can't regenerate.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be a good way to look at it, too.
But maybe. We're knocking people out, not killing them, so, you know, there's that.
Yeah. Sorry, Sean, we don't have a snappy name. I just go with assassins, or, you know, I don't know. That's it.
There's yeah, if you have a name, tell us. We want to know.
Yes, make up a name, guys.
We might use it. Okay. All right, so thanks everybody for writing, and please keep them coming. In fact, the mailbag is over, but it's not really over, because the fact talk at the end of the episode, spoiler alert, is going to be a little bit mailbag-fueled. So we'll see the mailbag on the flippity-flip.
Dork!
Yeah, I know.
The flippity-flip?
The flippity-flip.
He's channeling his inner DJ.
I do not understand.
You flip the disc over.
I'm sorry, only DJs
catch on the flip side.
And that's about it.
On the flip, when you flip the disc over, listen, you techno fueled dweeb.
I'm keeping all of this in.
I don't know what you're saying. All I know is wub wub wub.
Whatever.
So, for our feature topic today, we are assembling the Avengers. We have, of course, a set called Avengers versus X-Men, and we have some villains in there, and we have some free agents in there, as it is, too. We talked about villains. We're going to talk about the Avengers now. They are everywhere here. We have good Avengers. We have some less good Avengers. We have, in an OP award for month two, we have a new Avenger, even though... We know we already had Spider-Man in the game. He's new because this is a new card and a newly affiliated Avenger. Anyway, so let's start with this. Who are your favorite Avengers that we have in this game?
I'm going to not say Sarina, but I'm going to say Hawkeye, because I think he's the most useful after that other one. Very cool. I love all of his different variations. Each of his cards is cool and does something awesome. You've got Longbow, which serves as a kind of low-cost assassin. You've got the noted First Strike Hawkeye. And I don't even remember what his rare does, but I'm pretty sure it's awesome.
The rare, I think, is the First Strike. It's the uncommon that spins them down to level one.
That's pretty cool,
I just
too.
Happen to have a thing. Yeah, I just happen to have a thing up right now.
Yeah, so I think his uncommon is kind of the weakest of the lot, but they're still all very cool, and he's super cheap.
How about you, Evan?
Well, I'm going to also be Vogue and not say Sarina, even though she is very good, but I'm getting kind of sick of her. So I think I'll honestly say... As Hawkeye is also a very good card that I'm going to step away from. I actually like Iron Man a lot. I think he doesn't get as much play as he otherwise could, though I have ideas and I'm going to be trying something with him soon. I think he's interesting that he's very versatile. His cards all do something. They have a unique a set theme. They're all about him taking damage and doing something, but they're all very different in what they do. And unlike other characters who do something somewhat different or somewhat similar for their theme, like, say, Hulk, all of them are useful, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Iron Man, there's not really a bum in the lot. Some are more useful than others, of course, but each one of them has its use, whereas, you know, we're all like, Annihilator Hulk is completely useless.
Yes. And Anger Issues Hulk is way too overpriced.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know, the thing about Black Widow is that, well, yes, Sarina is very, very good. If we're talking about our favorite Avengers in this set, and we really are looking, as Evan is, and this is how I looked at it, at usefulness across the spectrum, and Katie, that's what you did too when you talked about Hawkeye, does the horribleness, the relative horribleness, I guess we'll say, to avoid angry emails, of her not super rare versions, you know, Killer Instinct and Natural, Does the less goodness of those, is the super rare good enough to not be affected or taken down in any way by how horrible the other two are?
Well,
that's the thing, though.
I have to argue with you. I didn't have Tsarina for quite some time, and I used Killer Instinct against Evan a couple of times in Avengers decks, and it was really good.
Yeah, Killer Instinct is actually a pretty good card. She just gets overshadowed by Tsarina. And I'll be totally honest, I don't even think the common is that bad. She's not, you know, oh man, amazing, but she is two costs and her ability is not terrible.
Yeah, I will say, natural, based on our current understanding of the rules order, isn't that good, because she doesn't do her thing until the end of the attack step, which means she still has to be standing, which is rare.
Yeah, and that was explained in the FAQ. And I think that if it happened the other way around, then perhaps it would be a bit better. But, okay, well, you may have sold me a little bit on natural, and you're not gonna sell me so much. Or, excuse me, you may have sold me a bit on Killer Instinct. I don't think I'm going to be sold on natural. It's going to be pretty difficult. Anybody who you might want to use her against is probably going to be able to knock her out.
Yeah.
Unless you definitely have her on level 3, and that's difficult. I really now to say that we're looking at the spectrum and everything like that. Iron Man, if I'm looking at the spectrum, is my favorite. I have to agree with you, Evan. If I'm picking out one that's not Tsarina because she's the popular choice, I really, really do like Hulk Green Goliath. He's just so much fun to use, and that's a solid one. I also really like the Spider-Mans. I think the Spider-Mans don't get the use that they could be getting, but we only have one Spider-Man that actually counts for an Avenger, so I just kind of went off the board here anyway. So Spider-Man, our pretend Avenger. I don't know how I feel about the OP reward one, but the free agent Spideys are all right, but they're not Avengers.
So. And sadly, Thors are all way too overpriced for what they do.
I think at least favorite Avenger has got to go to Thor. He's way overpriced. He does some cute things, but it's nowhere near enough to make up for his relative not awesome.
Yeah, I mean, his entire thing predates that there be fist characters on your opponent's team, which, you know, given the current meta, isn't necessarily a poor assumption. But, I mean, a lot of them are, you know, do something to the fist character. And it's like, well, okay, you can knock out a Tsarina. Oh, boy.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think the thing to also remember is there are so many strong masks, especially on the blocking sense, that it's like, that's great and all that you can get rid of fists, but the fists are primarily offensive, I've found, whereas the masks are primarily defensive. And if you're on the attack, you don't care about getting rid of the attackers. You want to get rid of the defenders. It takes me back to Nightcrawler. Like, Nightcrawler can only be blocked by masks. It's kind of like, thanks a lot, guys. That's the only people I don't want blocking me.
Yeah, I think I'm with you guys. This is definitely a consensus here. Thor just... You know, fist characters don't do enough awesome things. Well, let me rephrase that. The fist characters that would be affected by Thor in any significant way don't do enough awesome things for it to be worth me paying that much for Thor. Oh, his stats are nice, but his abilities just don't cut the mustard.
Yeah, and the thing is, he costs 6 and 7. You can get those stats on almost anyone at that price.
Mm-hmm.
So his stats don't make him that awesome. They make him on par with other 6 and 7 cost guys.
Yeah, that's pretty much that. So I think our favorites, we agreed and we disagreed a little. Our least favorites, definitely a consensus here. Now, we'd be remiss if we discussed the Avengers without talking about two sort of buddies that we have here that are not Avengers affiliated, but really help out with all or some. And that would be, of course, Nick Fury. All three of his forms do something that aids the Avengers as a group. And, of course, War Machine, who has kind of the buddy cop movie thing going with Iron Man.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, they did just have a buddy cop movie that came
out. Yes, they did.
Yeah, I've loved Nick Fury from the moment I saw him. I think I've said it more than once. My very first deck was an Avengers deck facilitated by Nick Fury, and he's really good at the one. Patch is fantastic, and Mr. Anger is fantastic. Both of them are awesome. World War II vet isn't that awesome, especially after the errata that they had come out for him.
Yeah, and they kind of went back and forth on that one, right? They said, oh yeah, it stacks, and then they said, oh wait, no, we rescind everything that we just said. All those rulings and the things you were happy to get, nope. Ha ha, fooled you.
Yeah. Sorry, WizKids. Call us if you want some ideas about the long-term repercussions of those rulings. We would be happy to help.
Yes, we would. Yes, we would. I love Mr. Anger. I love Patch. They're both fantastic. I've used Mr. Anger more, but that's... I'm kind of starting to lean towards Patch because in some of those games where I was using Mr. Anger, I didn't always need to get... I was trying to build up to a Hulk and do a Hulk Human Torch thing. Well, I didn't always need to get to that Hulk. I was sometimes able to win beforehand, and I feel like Patch would help me a little more consistently than Mr. Anger would. So there's that. But both of those are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, Patch has the higher price to go with his slightly more awesome. I do like the two, though, for the quick hit of energy. I don't think... Obviously, basic actions are a little better on the energy curve, but he's really fantastic if you don't, if you just have two spare energy lying around and you want to pick something up.
My concern, I think, with Patch is that a lot of the the Avengers are beefy. Let's just get that on the table. So that when you attack with them, your opponent's probably going to prioritize making sure they get blocked. So. Unless you really have a clear path down your opponent's face, I think most of the time you're just not going to get things through, and his ability will, like, a lot of times it'll be, you know, how many Avengers are there that are small? Hint, it's one. Two. Serena and Hawkeye, but Hawkeye has such a high attack value, he's also going to get some priority being blocked. So a lot of the times you're not squeaking a ton of extra damage out of him. And I think I'd almost sometimes prefer the ability to just spam my characters and not care about energy at all.
Well, that's entirely fair, though. I think Sarina on her, Black Widow in general, on level 3, she's 3-3, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even if you're prioritizing some of the higher damage characters, I mean, you're still getting through an extra 2 to 3 damage than you would have before if, say, Black Widow is allowed to go through. And I think that can be effective. I think it's kind of like one of those bad bargain situations that we've talked about before. I can block this stuff that's huge, but I'm still going to get hit for maybe a little bit more than I should. So there's that. I also would like to see perhaps Patch partnered with something like the Spider-Man, who you can pay the fist and force everybody to block him, and then see what happens. Now, the problem is going to be, of course, getting high cost enough people out that it's actually going to matter, but certainly, you know, a possibility, something we haven't seen a lot of yet, and I wonder if it can be fast enough. It might not be able
to. Yeah, I think that's the problem, is the speed.
True. The only other thing that I would say about Patch versus Mr. Anger is that sometimes I kind of like that the decision, can I buy this or can I not, is made for me. And part of this is being a disciplined player. But in a game I was playing the other day, we did a Daredevil draft at the game store. I met up with a couple of people. And so I was playing, and I couldn't buy anything, and neither of us had enough low-cost characters, but not enough that we could mulligan or anything like that. Not too few that we could mulligan. Nothing that was too. So I just picked up an invulnerability. And it kind of spooked the other guy. So the next turn, he had 4 energy. He bought the other 2 invulnerabilities. You know, you can sometimes be tempted into making a less optimal decision just because you can buy it. And frankly, if I have, you know, Nick Fury, Black Widow, Serena, and, you know, one of the Beasts out there, I'd probably rather buy Black Widow or Beast than be tempted to buy the Nick Fury. I'd rather be forced to hold off, if that makes sense.
I guess that's fair.
So, all right, and of course War Machine is another guy who we don't want to forget about here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he could have been branded as an Avenger, but I understand from a meta perspective why he wasn't, because if you put him together with Patch, one of his cards is unblockable, and I think that would just be way too overpowered or unblockable if Iron Man is on the table. So I understand why he's not an Avenger, even though he's spent a good amount of time as one in the comics. He's kind of the lesser cousin of Iron Man, I think. He's got a good global, though.
Yeah, I think that's actually the reason to, one of the reasons to take him. His global is pretty cool. And, he's a little expensive, but his rare is definitely a assassin. So, if you're including Iron Man anyway, and you, for some reason, don't want to take Storm Windrider or something.
Well, you could always have a choice. You can always have two assassins. I mean, you've got Loki possibly on the other side, so no reason not to play the field.
Yeah, and have a backup, right. Yeah, definitely, definitely. I like War Machine, and I like the partnership with Iron Man. And frankly, I'd like to see a few more buddy cards. You know, if you didn't have this, we were talking about this a little bit several weeks back, Evan, when you were saying that you wish that they had more creative ways to control costs. I think War Machine is one who they could have easily made cost 6 or even 7 if he had these abilities without the requirement for Iron Man to be there. But by forcing the partnership with Iron Man, you keep his cost down very slightly. He's a 5, and I think in every form.
Yes.
And he has some really interesting abilities, but again, they're dependent on Iron Man being in the field. So, you know, that can be a great plus or it can be a great minus, because you know, how many times do you play a game like this and you're trying so hard to get one specific condition met that you lose focus and then end up losing the game? And he certainly makes that possible if you just try and get War Machine and Iron Man out at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it can be rough with the presence of Storm and a bunch of other assassin characters to get them both at the same time. So that's pretty tricky. I kind of wish he cost less because of that, because he's kind of not super good.
I think he could stand for being 4 as opposed to 5, at least on some of them. I think his unblockable one is probably good at 5.
Yes. I don't think that one should be lowered. I agree.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think I would be a little happier if he did maybe one more, if the costs stay where they are, but he maybe did one more point of damage across each level. He's 3, 4, 5. If that was more like 4, 5, 6, I'd probably be cooler with that.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we've talked a lot about who we like, who we don't like, the honorary Avengers as they were. What about the viability of Avengers teams? Katie, you've played with them. I know I have. Evan, I'm sure you have, though we haven't. You and I haven't talked as much about that aspect of it. What do you guys like to do when you're putting together an Avengers team?
Well, obviously Thor stays home.
Yep.
Because he's not useful.
Nope.
I kind of hate to say it, but Cap kind of has to stay home too, unless
really? Wait.
No, unless you're working on that sidekick strategy. Like his purchase cost is a little pricey and his stats are a little low for taking advantage of the Nick Fury. I mean, for me, all Avengers decks have a Nick Fury if you're really focusing on pushing forward with that.
And
I like Cap, but his stats are mediocre for his cost.
Has a very high fielding cost for his stats.
Yeah. So for me, you know, you don't bring him unless you're looking at kind of a Green Goblin Cap deck. Then it's cool. But otherwise, I'm not bringing him for damage dealt. I'm bringing him for his special abilities. So I think with Avengers decks, you're looking at the quick churning. You get your Black Widow, you get your Hawkeye, you get your Nick Fury. They're all cheap. They're all quick to churn over, and you just attack. And but that's the speed component. You know, I mean, Nick Fury is all about speeding up what already works.
Yeah. And you probably, you know, you throw in Human Torch because why not?
Yep.
And your end game plan probably involves a Hulk of some sort. You know, I'd honestly say Green Goliath is a great idea, especially if you're running Torch as well, because then your endgame is, and I blow up everything and then attack with all my little guys.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I like to go too. I love the Human Torch Green Goliath combo. What I think I like most about that, and I think we've talked a little bit about this before, is that I like the kinds of strategies where you are actually, you're damaging yourself, or you're using a global ability against yourself to pull your character back. Or, you know, I had an article up recently about using Norman Osborn Green Goblin instead of Silver Surfer to get a couple of sidekicks into prep instead of having to pay two life. I like using your stuff in that sort of, I guess, what's an unorthodox way if you're not familiar with these kinds of games. But I guess if you are familiar with these kinds of games, it really is just a more strategic way. I find that to be a lot of fun, and I don't know, it feels cool to do it.
Yeah. I think I was actually going to bring up that Captain America is kind of bad.
He's just not nearly as bad as...
He's not as bad as Thor, but he's...
he's. I mean, he falls into that kind of five-cost problem that you sort of... That you talked about when you were looking at purchase and fielding costs, where he costs his TFC is five, and they're kind of the problem children at that price. They don't have the stats to back up their abilities.
Okay. Well, I mean, the stats aren't like...
I didn't say bad. I said not great.
The stats for fives aren't overall bad. It's more that his are bad. He has a similar stat line to Spider-Man at three more fielding costs, at one more fielding cost per level.
Yeah, yeah.
And his abilities honestly do not cut the mustard to make up for the difference.
Well, here's the question, though. If you're using one of the ones that, say you're using Natural Leader, which pumps up the sidekicks, plus one for those guys, don't you think that makes him a little more worth it? Because you're not just buying the 5-4 or 5-5 on level 2 or level 3. You're also buying a couple of extra attack and defense for the sidekicks that you have in the field. And depending on how you're using those, that could be pretty beneficial.
Well, I mean, there is a possibility of the weenie rush. I mean, I'm not going to undersell the possibility of that. But you've got to keep him on the ground. And we're running so assassin heavy in the meta right now that I wouldn't rely on keeping anything like in active for longer than a few turns.
Yeah, especially, again, he just doesn't have great stats. At best, he's a five five, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's not super hard to take out. I mean, you know, Beast isn't going to do it, but.
Well, I think that if his level 1, level 2 is 5-4, level 3 is 5-5. I think if level 1 was 4-4, you guys would probably feel a little bit better about it. I just think that 3-3 looks really bad sitting there. And also, I just realized that the 1-3-3, if it had a burst on there, that would be the logo that we use for the reserve pool. But regardless, of that, and I arbitrarily picked those numbers, if anybody was wondering. There's no reason that it exists. The way that it does, other than, I guess there's three of us, but...
But there weren't three of us when you made that logo, mister.
It's true.
No, shut up, Katie.
I'm just putting that out there.
That's true. It's true. Well, actually, Evan was going to come in and do some articles. We weren't sure if he's going to be regular on the podcast, but that was the site logo, like, right after the three of us said, let's go. Anyway, okay, you guys are bringing me around a little bit on this. I like his first two. I don't care for his last two. But what if then we're using Nick Fury? What if we're using Sergeant Fury here? And what if we're using... God, I can't get the sentence out.
He didn't spend...
What if we're... Yes, I know.
Eight weeks in basis to be called Mr. Fury.
What if we are using Nick Fury then to eliminate that fielding cost? I mean, how do you feel about him at that point? Because that one only costs two.
I do think the fielding cost is coming down to zero is pretty helpful.
I mean, for any of these, that is a great help.
Yes,
I mean, right?
Yes.
Hulk looks amazing with zero fielding cost, but you still have to be able to afford him.
Yeah.
But with this guy, you have a pretty affordable, at least it in American Hero and Natural Leader. Pretty affordable character. Max is out at 5.5. I can think of another pretty affordable character that Max is out at 5.5 that also does stuff with sidekicks that everybody likes.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he's the next Gobby. Don't get me wrong.
No, I mean,
in many ways, Captain America is, like, more different Gobby. Honestly, I feel like he's, you know, Gobby's less good cousin.
Yeah, he's really weird to think of that. I think it's funny, thematically speaking, that you have Cap and Norman Osborn as, like, kind of two sides of the Avengers coin, with the Avengers and the Dark Avengers.
Yeah, no, thematically, I understand why Captain America would be very sidekick heavy, right? He rallies the troops. He's a symbol as much as he is a hero. But I don't understand where, and you guys can enlighten me, because, again, there's my ignorance of the Marvel Universe is showing. I don't understand thematically where Norman or Green Goblin's sidekick fetish comes into play.
I really think it comes from the fact that he totally ran the world for, like, 2 years.
Really? Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Gotcha. Nope. Understood.
Yeah, I mean, and he ran the Cabal, and he, like, ran the Dark Avengers, and he was the head of Hammer. So lots of stuff going on where he was the boss of things.
Well, okay, that all makes sense. Now, the other side of this, with us talking about Captain America's fielding cost, is that I think that if you took away the fielding cost from Thor, I still wouldn't want him.
Yes.
I don't see a reason. My time and energy is better spent elsewhere. And I'm sorry, Thor, I hate to hate on you. I love your movies. You're fantastic. You could kill me. But if you were real. But even if you cost nothing to field, I still would not. I can't think of a situation where I thought, man, gee whiz, I wish I had Thor.
Man, I would totally buy him if he cost, like, $4. Then I'd love the stats, but that's all he is a beefy stat cake.
All right. Well, is there anything else that we want to say about the Avengers? I mean, I think we've covered a lot of ground here from... I think the team that we just discussed, by the way, is the most viable. Though the caveat being that if your opponent's not prepared for Sarina, sometimes just having her is going to be enough. I mean, that's just what it is. You have to be prepared for these cards that are out there. If you don't think, oh, this is a possibility that I might see this, then you're just wrong. You have to be ready for it. She is easily dealt with. We've talked about that before. But if you don't have that mechanism right away, then you're not going to be very successful. And I have beat opponents that with the Avengers deck that we just discussed with that was supposed to build up towards the Human Torch Hulk thing. I've beat them with just some Sarinas and a couple of beasts, and that was all I really needed, because they just couldn't get anything out. They bought actions at inappropriate times and stuff like that. So,
yeah,
it's something that needs to be said.
But I mean, definitely things to think about. Mr. Anger plus Human Torch plus Avengers equals a really bad time for your opponent.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's brutal.
Absolutely is.
Yeah, I think the question at this point is, in the new set, who's going to be, if anyone, an Avenger? We know Falcon isn't going to be, for whatever reason.
I am so salty about that. So salty.
Because he's literally always an Avenger.
Yes, he's, like, been an Avenger for so long, and he better have some Cap synergy, but other than that, I'm super cranky about that. I mean, maybe Vision would be an Avenger, and I could maybe make a case for
Ant-Man and Black Panther.
Yeah, Ant-Man and Black Panther, but that's probably it.
Funny feeling they're going to Ant-Man as Scott Lang and not.
I think they're going to do a War Machine thing where they have Pym.
Pym Lang and
O'Grady or Grady or something like that. Anyway, I think that's what they're going to do for that. It's not going to just be Pym.
Yeah, well, and it brings me back to the point of I really just wish that they would have, if they're going to do a character like you're talking about with Ant-Man or like they did with War Machine or Venom, I wish that they had, you know, different affiliations depending on which version of the character that you were using. You know, when you truly are having Angelo Fortunato versus Eddie Brock.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Parnell Jacobs versus, you're going to have to help me, the other War Machine, James Rhodes.
Yeah.
You know, those sorts of things. It would be really cool because, you know, different ones were with different teams.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Bonus points because Scott Lang could totally be a Fantastic Four, but guess what? He's not going to be. Because yeah, the Fantastic Four get no love.
Similarly to She-Hulk, she could be an Avenger. She could be Fantastic Four. We'll see where they go with that. My bet is actually unaligned. But...
Yeah, that's my guess.
All right, so that's the Avengers as we have them now, and as we hope they might be in the future. We'll have to see where the Uncanny X-Men set brings us. But until that time, that's about all we can say for now. Are the rules getting you down? Us too. That's why it's time for Factar.
All right. As we said when we were doing the mailbag, this week's Fact Talk actually came to us from a listener. The listener was Craig, and he said, first up, love the podcast and the blog articles. Keep them coming. So we will try to do that, Craig. But his Fact Talk rules question is about Venom, Angelo Fortunato, versus Storm Windrider or Storm African Priestess, the two that go upon fielding. So the question is, say that I have Venom, Angelo Fortunato fielded, so he gives a -2A, -2D to all the opponent's non-Fisk characters, and then you have Storm Windrider coming onto the field. She does her rolling thing, and then she turns Venom into energy, thus, you know, moving him back to the reserve pool area. But obviously his effect goes away. So the question is Storm knocked out or not? Evan, what do you think?
My original thoughts were that, well, she comes onto the field. She gets to use her ability,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that Venom is on the field, and it takes him away, and she manages to squeak by. But I looked at the rules again, and no, that's absolutely not the case.
I told you not to look at the rules. I was going to sweep
I was already looking at the rules when you told me not to do that.
All right, Craig. It's kind of a spoiler. We were going to hash it out and have a big argument over your question. But the fact is, it's actually in the rules, and you can refer to page 19. And you can find it in the bonuses and damage section, where it says bonuses are listed as a modifier and that the bonuses cannot reduce a number below zero. So if a die's defense is reduced to zero, it is knocked out. On the other hand, the very last line of that section is, once gained, bonuses last until the end of the turn. So the fact is, it doesn't matter that Venom went away. Per the rules, his effect of -1A, -2D lasts until the end of the turn. So it sounds like he is going to affect your entire attack phase for that whole turn, even though he's been knocked away, which is kind of...
What a jerk.
Yeah, which is like really awesome for your opponent. So that actually surprisingly makes him even stronger than I had originally thought he was, because that ability, and I the same would I think would go for Dr. Doom with his -1/-1, it would persist until the end of the turn per the rules, because it's applied at the start and then it stays.
It would apply to characters who are out. New characters won't get that because the ability is there. The bonuses, quote unquote, they've put on are still there.
Yeah, I will.
But new characters won't get that, so they're fine.
Yes, I will agree with that. What you can do is you could field something that has two or fewer defense, and it would not be subject to the Angelo Fortunato debuff. So that's a super bizarre situation. I think there's a possibility for a clarification from WizKids, but based on the rules as they are currently stated, the quote-unquote bonus of -1A, -2D that Angelo Fortunato brings to the table.
-2 persists
until the end of the round on all characters it affects at the beginning of your turn. So what a jerk. Angelo Fortunato, even stronger than I thought he was.
Yeah, I guess the general rule of thumb there is if you're going to want to deal with Venom or Doom for that matter, and not have your little guys die immediately, which maybe you do. Maybe you want to cycle your Hawkeyes or something but without your opponent getting a say in the matter. Then you'll want to play your assassin first.
Yeah. Yeah. That unfortunately doesn't work for your assassins who require an attack, but there you go. I was actually pretty surprised, Craig, because my gut feeling was that the debuff would go away as soon as Venom did, but per the rules, it doesn't seem like that's the case. All right, so that's going to wrap us up for today.
It sure will. This is Dave from the future and on a really less good microphone. I had a run at the beginning of that last segment, and Katie and Evan did a fantastic job taking you through Fact Talk and finishing out the show. I want to thank you so much on behalf of myself, Katie, and Evan for listening once again. This is episode 10. It is our decasode, and we're so thrilled to be moving into double digits here. We'll see you in 1 week with episode 11, but until then, have fun playing games, everybody. We'll see ya.
Talk. The Fact Talk.
I was going for the Sega theme.
Oh, I was going for the clapper.
Anyway.
Well,
we're all thinking of different things. Go ahead.
Excellent.